Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Slammy, hey, you already know what's up. What's that, another home run? But you know the job ain't done till we hold that trophy up.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome. Episode 588 of the Talking Friars podcast and YouTube show. Ben Fadden here with a special guest. Darnay Tripp has been on the show a few times already, and it is great to see him. NBC7 San Diego, host of On Friar with Derek Togerson. So, Darnay, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate you coming on here. Obviously, this is going to be pretty much just State of the Padres episode here for Padres fans here on this off day, which it's their last off day for a little bit. They're going to be 13 days in a row, I believe, with a game. Blue Jays, Rockies, Phillies, Reds, I believe, are the four series coming up. So, just first off, three series wins in a row, Darnay. Have your thoughts changed after these first like 21 games or whatever it's been about how relevant, see what I did there, how relevant this team is in the National League?
Well, I thought that they could be fairly relevant. I think it's just we ride kind of the highs and lows, the roller coaster. I mean, I think we used the roller coaster analogy a lot last year, especially. And I think it was just kind of seeing those glimpses of their potential and then obviously the dips and the inability to kind of string it together. And I think that's natural. It's like you're early in the season. That's all you have to go on. If it's June and you say, well, this guy hit well in April and May, you know, you don't have that anymore. You just have these 20 or so games to kind of form your opinions on. And I think like I went into the season, especially after the Cease trade, thinking, okay, like they've got the pieces to be a playoff contending team. Are they going to win the division? Probably not. But even as bad as they were last year, now it took like a miraculous September to get within a couple games of the playoffs. Certainly this team has the pieces to do that. And I think, you know, when they're down 8-0 a week and a half ago against the Cubs, you can't help but think, okay, maybe this team just doesn't quite have it. And the offensive issues are what they are and all that. And then, you know, they obviously have, you know, a historic comeback and then do that a number of times over the course of the last week and suddenly feel a lot better. I think what we've seen is kind of some of the intangibles with this team, like the makeup, the resilience, togetherness, a little more fight, You know, aside from like the numbers are going to be what they are, that sort of thing. But I, that was something that seemed to be lacking with last year's group. And maybe a little of that would have turned some of those extra inning games, would have turned some of those one run games. And that might've been the difference between them being left out of the playoffs and being a playoff caliber team. And so I think that in and of itself is really encouraging. Even if you look at, even when they're winning games, leaving a lot of meat on the bone, you know, a lot of opportunities that you see come and go, and, you know, guys in the rotation struggling a little bit. They're not perfect, but they're still finding ways to win and win series. And so I think that's something to be really encouraged about.
Yeah. What have you seen that has been different compared to last year? I think there's like some obvious things. The coaching staff, obviously, with Schilt as the manager and, you know, actually having a hitting coach instead of Ryan Flaherty last year, which was, it was interesting. You know, I was listening to Darren the other day and he brought it up. And I'm like, yeah, that's something that I probably should have thought more about or said more about. Like, Ryan Flaherty was the hitting coach last year. It just seemed a little bit weird.
But he wasn't. But, he was the offensive coordinator.
Exactly. Yeah, there was that as well. But then, like, the collaboration between the coaching staff and the unique structure this year, that's different. Robert Suarez being willing to go more than three outs.
Yeah.
Pitching consistently, that's different. Having Profar the entire year. Having Jackson Merrill with that energy and obviously the upgrade offensively, just all around, really. I mean, Grish was good defensively in center, but just overall, you're going to take Merrill right now over Trent Grisham. So there's just some differences there. The approach, it feels like they're a team. Just, is there anything else that has stuck out to you so far?
Yeah, I think there's a bunch. You know, you mentioned the approach. I think we were all trying to kind of figure it out, like what it was last year. I think when Jace Tingler came around, you know, after Andy Green is like, okay, they're going to want to work counts. You know, they're going to be a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? Just, you know, just careful with their approach and what pitches they're swinging at and that sort of thing. Try and make pitchers work. A little more emphasis on base and that sort of thing. But then it felt like, especially last year under Melvin, we were all trying to figure out like, okay, what is the approach? Sometimes it seemed like they are ultra aggressive. And then you mentioned Trent Grisham and, you know, Cronenworth as well. It's like, how many times are these guys going to watch great pitches just go right by? And, you know, if it's, how often did you see Trent Grisham take something right down the middle of the strike zone, first pitch of the at bat, and be like, you're not going to get a better pitch than that? And I get it. You know, you're giving this guy a look, you know what I mean? You're settling into this at bat, but you're not going to get a better pitch than that. And I think what you've seen and what we've heard about is kind of a more like thought out approach that everybody seems to be on board of, like, we're going to be aggressive, but with our pitch, you know what I mean? Like, we're not going to take walks for the sake of taking walks. We're not going to work counts for the sake of working counts. You've seen that where they're on the account, they see their pitch right off the bat and they're swinging, they're getting after it. And so I think it's kind of threading that needle between, you know, making a pitcher work a little bit, but also making them pay if they give you something that you should be able to hit. And so I think that's been more effective and a bit more consistent. I talked with Derek on the pod on Monday after the Dodgers series about how just seeing the benches come out, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And seeing Profar, like, you don't necessarily have to agree with the way Profar responded to that pitch. It's kind of whatever. Like, and he even admitted it was kind of a misunderstanding.
Yeah.
But everybody came out. Manny was right there. Like, they were ready. And I remember hearing about that being something that the fan base was talking about last year. Like, I want to say it was like a Mariners series.
Yep. Steven Wilson threw out a guy, I think, or accidentally.
And Seattle was ready.
Seattle
was ready. And the Padres were not. And I, you know, and then Soto got thrown at one point. And I remember Manny talking about that afterwards. But it seemed like, you know, the guys weren't really like, they didn't have each other's backs in the same way. You know, fight again is a word that's been thrown around a lot. Obviously, the resilience, and I think what you saw in that Cubs game, again, going back to the approach of, you know, and this is something that Schill talked about, you know, one of the before their first full squad workout when I was there in Peoria, and that we've heard about a ton since, is every at bat is a situation, right? And I think that, like, even Tatis drawing a work, walk, and then Cronenworth 9 pitches home run in an 8-0 game where he could just go up there and be like, all right, you know, what am I doing here? Like, we're not going to win. Maybe I'll swing for the fences a few times and hope for the best. Just the fact that there is that kind of, again, that approach, that diligence, is something that set this team apart from last year. So I think there's any number of things. And again, just like, if you look at the last 6 games, they went 4-2, right?
Yeah.
They're 2-4 at best last year, right? I mean, they probably win, like maybe they win that set, the finale at Dodger Stadium. Like, they probably aren't having that comeback. So maybe they get one at Dodger Stadium. They might get swept. They win Tuesday against the Brewers when they jump out, score 4 runs, and kind of more or less coast from there. They're not winning that Monday game. They're not winning a 0-0 game, you know? And so even if you look at them and be like, okay, this team needs to play a whole lot better. Obviously, certainly that's the case, but at least they're starting pitching, not awesome, offensively better, but still tons of missed opportunities. And they're still finding ways to win games. Like, that in and of itself is a great sign. And hopefully that's kind of ends up being a trademark of this team going forward.
Yeah. And we get it. It's 21 games, and I don't want to keep saying, oh, it's early, because we all gotten that last year, but
right,
it still is early in the season. If you look at what percentage of the way through the season are we, but with this Dodgers, these Dodger matchups, because they play the Dodgers more than any team in baseball. Like, they have a lot of matchups already against the Dodgers. And I think that they have been able to compete in pretty much all of the games. And I think that this, we know the team before the deadline could get some additions. It could look a little bit different, but the core, how they have been able to compete, gives me confidence that it can be like 2022 and they can compete with the Dodgers in a postseason series, as long as, you know, they're playing good baseball in September going into it. Like, how do you feel with that?
Yeah, sure. And it's like, yeah, kind of whatever happens now is, it is what it is. You know, what was it, the beginning of 2021 when they took like 4 out of the first 7, mm-hmm. Everybody was really fired up about it. They obviously tank it the back half of the season. Dodgers own them in all their late season series. They own them to start 2022. And then what happens in the postseason? So it all eventually, but you just have to put yourself in that situation. So, like, 2 things, you have to get in that situation. So that's to be determined, but also, like, you know, go up there and feel like, okay, we can beat this team. Mm-hmm. And they did that. They've already proven that. And like, Ohtani's obviously always going to have your attention. Freeman, Betts, those guys are always going to have your attention. Will Smith even as well. But I feel like there have been other Dodger teams in recent years where it's like 1-9. You're like, oh my gosh, like, are we ever going to get a break here? You know, even if it's Chris Taylor, AJ Pollock, you know, some of these other guys.
Yeah.
This team, again, it being early, and there's always the chance of them making moves or something clicks for an Altman or for a Taylor or Kiki Hernandez, any of these guys. But, you know, there isn't maybe that same fear factor or the same kind of gauntlet that you have to go through once you get through like 4 or 5 or what have you. Dodgers bullpen hasn't been lights out for a couple years now. You look at the guys that they saw through the series, like, who's really, like, Yamamoto is going to be really good, right? But like, are you going to go into James Paxton and be like, I don't know if we can hit this guy, you know?
Right.
And so I obviously,
their team could change. Their team could change.
Their team,
like, they have a whole rotation on the IL. So that's the only thing where,
yes,
I would maybe worry about it a little bit, but I mean, this is their offense. This is that.
Yeah.
And they've been able to compete with that.
Yeah, you know, when you have Bueller in the mix, that sort of thing, it becomes a different type of situation. But I think, you know, just seeing that, having the success, that's going to carry forward. Now, does it necessarily mean that that's going to have the same outcome next time they see them? No. But I think Schilt seems to be good about just getting them to kind of take a day-by-day approach. We got the confidence. We know we can beat them. Okay. But that's all in the past. You know, what do we need to do today to give ourselves the best chance of doing it again? It just seems to be, you know, everybody seems to have their head on straight. They seem to have a good just kind of outlook and plan of attack on a day-to-day basis and how they want to go about their business. And I think all those things are really important. Those things kind of transcend, like, what Xander Bogaerts' batting average is right now, and Manny Machado being on a 10-game hit streak or whatever it is. You know, those are the things that kind of you can control that. And the controllable things weren't so good last year, and the controllable things seem much better this year. And so that should help them as the season goes on and they deal with the kind of the inevitable highs and lows. They might get swept next time they play the Dodgers. But I think to your original point, the fact that they are competitive and now go up there and feel like, okay, we can hang with those guys, that's going to mean something.
Yeah. Let's move to Tatis and Merrill. Tatis, I predicted him as NL MVP, I believe, before this season started. I don't think that's like this bold prediction or anything like that. And there's a lot of quality talent, but he's off to a pretty good start. Now, I was just on the Fangraphs leaderboards and he's 20th in F4, but like whatever, we're 20 games in. Yeah. And that's, by the way, that's all of Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. I mean, Orlando Arcia is 7th. Anthony Volpe with the Yankees is 6th. Like there's some guys that I'm confident Tatis will be ahead of at some point here, but he's off to a good start there. And then I also want to talk about Merrill and just give your thoughts on him so far. Rookie of the year. I'm seeing the MLB polls or whatever they do, the rankings on social media, and you're seeing Jackson Churio. You're seeing those names, Yamamoto, and you're not really seeing Merrill get the love. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's sort of with the power rankings that they still do for some reason in Major League Baseball on MLB.com. It's really not about what they're doing right now. It's about what was our power rankings right at the beginning of the year. And let's just keep it like that for as long as we can until there's, you know, a bigger sample size, and then we'll change it if we have to. That's how I feel it is with rookie of the year, really everything. But right now, if you're actually watching the games, Merrill is the rookie of the year, in my opinion. I'm not watching every NL rookie, but he's pretty legit. And Fernando, I mean, he's up there. I'm not saying he is the MVP, but he's up there with what he's done so far.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. It is fairly early, Ben.
Yes.
I was on with Jim the other day and he asked me about Jackson and that sort of thing. And it's like, I did end up looking at Churio, and I know Holiday hasn't done anything, but I did end up looking at their numbers out of curiosity. But it's like, I'm probably not going to entertain that too much until at least July or August. Not to say that Merrill won't be there.
Yeah.
It's just like,
it reminds me of like First Take debates that, you know,
and you have to
NFL or NBA MVP, and
you got to talk about
that's just
it.
Where my mind goes to,
of course,
when I'm talking about Tatis and Merrill. But we don't have to talk about that, but like just what we've seen from them so far. Tatis, this feels like an Acuna type year where Acuna had the injury, not so great next year, and then look what he did last year. Could be Tatis there. And then Merrill, I mean, Kevin Acey just put out a piece about Merrill. And I love the way that he described it. Like this maybe was a player out of Mike Schilt's dreams, you know, just someone that great situationally, all about winning. Like literally he's obsessed with winning. I think AJ Ellis was quoted in that article. So anyone that's just listening and didn't know about that article, feel free to go read that from Kevin. But I just love what I've seen from Merrill so far.
And again, to your original point, everything he's done to this point suggests that yes, there's a good chance he will be in that conversation when it becomes more relevant later in the year, which is awesome. And what he's done to this point, I think, like, he's handled everything so well, like extra innings, Dodger Stadium, game winning hit, you know, and not trying to do too much, just doing what the situation asked of him. And so I think, there's just like, he's got such a good head on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we knew that, you know, he said the right things, but it's hard to really know until you're facing live bullets. And the fact that he's come in and handled himself as well as he has.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say. Your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Obviously, his play in center field has been phenomenal, and that was on display over the weekend as well. And so it's awesome. And yeah, I think Shildt does love guys like this. The only thing I would say is that makes him maybe not a Mike Shildt guy is the fact that he didn't have to grind his way through the minors as long as like a Mike Shildt guy. Like I can see like a 24 years old, like very traditional run up like that to me feels like Mike Shildt. But Mike Shildt, like the fact that he did, you know, Merrill had his path, you know, and they didn't really push him along too quickly until this jump, you know, to the big leagues. And so there is kind of that, you know, old school element as well. And I think, just the fact that, you know, he's come here with the mind that he just wants to help the team and he wants to attack every opportunity. He's very confident, but he's not cocky. You know, he checks a lot of boxes there. I talked to his parents and they were like, there was some knock on Jackson because of he had such a rough start last year. He had some health issues that contributed to that. And they're like, we were with him in Michigan in like May. He had a terrible month. He was, you know, he had been sick and he's like, it's the lowest we've ever seen him. But then he came out of that and his dad was basically saying like, I think that's going to really serve him well because inevitably that's going to happen to him in the bigs. But now he's got that in the back of his mind. Like, okay, I've been here before. Felt like I couldn't figure anything out. And I ended up putting together a pretty impressive year. And I think, you know, he's the type of kid that it seems like those experiences, you know, resonate with him and he'll carry those forward. And that'll mean something when he inevitably goes through a tough month or two, because it's going to happen at some point. But he's been incredible. And Tatis has been awesome, too. You know, we've seen glimpses of it. We've seen two homer games, three hit games, seen kind of the strikeouts go down, which I think is kind of one of the big, like, even when he was kind of in MVP form, still good for a couple strikeouts here or there, you know. And so it seems like he's been a bit more discerning from that standpoint, which is great. Still would love to see him go on just like a vintage Tatis run where he hits like four homers in a week or a couple multi-home run games and that sort of thing. But, you know, he's obviously closer to that full-on version that we last saw in 2021 than he was last year. But I do remember a game, you know, Yankee Stadium last year, two homers, and we're like, okay, Tatis is back. But there were kind of those highs and lows. And so I think that's going to be one of the more interesting things to kind of track this year is, I think you're right. Like nobody would be surprised if Tatis had an MVP year, but if he had like a 850 OPS type season, all-star, you know, OPS plus in like the 130s, 140s, as opposed to like 150s and above, you know, so where we're still kind of trying to figure out like, where does he land? What does he end up being going forward as he enters kind of like his physical prime? That's just kind of part of the unknown coming off the time away and some of the injuries and stuff that he's dealt with.
Yeah. Moving to another fan favorite, another relevant player this year, Jurickson Profar,
maybe the most relevant player.
Yeah. I mean, Guy has a weighted runs created plus of 152. So anyone that doesn't know, that's really good. 52% above league average so far this year. And yes, as Darnay said, it's early, Ben. But hey, it's I love what I'm seeing from Jurickson so far. Now, Tommy Pham goes to the White Sox. 1 year, $1.5 million in incentives. I would like to have Tommy on the team, but it feels like Profar is just one of those guys. You know, Kike Hernandez with the Dodgers. He goes to the Red Sox. You don't really hear a whole lot, but Dodgers, it just feels like it fits. There's players like that around Major League Baseball. With Profar, it just seems like the Padres are that team for him. So this may end up being 2022, and he's fine being the starting left fielder all season long.
Yeah, and if he keeps playing like this, he can be the starting left fielder as long as he likes, because he's been awesome. He just is a great fit with this clubhouse. You see it in the way that he interacts with the guys. You know, going back to Sunday, like, it's funny. He's the good vibes guy, or Saturday, but he's got an edge to him, right? Like, and we've seen it. We've seen him get into it with Kershaw in the past.
Yeah,
like,
2020, right? Yeah. I think a lot of F-bombs that we saw there. Yeah,
and so he's got both sides of that, right? And it's something I think this team needs. Again, things we've talked about, kind of having that grit, but also a guy that can kind of unify and get everybody like feeling good. And, you know, even early in the season, like pumping everybody up. And he said that obviously closed doors, but then he said it to us, like, we got a really good team. And he says that all the time. And, you know, I think there is something to somebody that's just like constantly reminding everybody around him, like, we're good, especially in a long season when there's going to be some slumps and maybe guys aren't feeling great about themselves, or you're having kind of a stretch of games like they had before the comeback against the Cubs. So he's been awesome. You know, I asked him about, you know, what is it about the Padres? And he's like, I just feel like I'm back in Curaçao playing in San Diego. Like, this is the environment I played in, and it reminds me of home. And you can't put like a dollar figure on that. You can't, you know, there's no way to really, you like truly understand or quantify like the impact of something like that when it's the environment and obviously the guys that you're around. And I was thinking about this the other day. It's like, okay, like, he's not going to have 1,000+ OPS forever. Like, he's not going to be like, he might not end up being like tops in the team and like average on base, slugging, RBIs, hit, you know, all that stuff. But it's also not a 20-year-old, right? Like, this is an established, this is a 10-year guy, as Manny reminded everybody on Sunday.
But that's irrelevant, right? 10 years in the big leagues, that he's irrelevant.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is me putting some respect on his name. Like, I feel like we're not always going to get this level of Profar. There's going to be some ebbs and flows, but he seems like a type of guy that like, there's going to be a pretty solid baseline there. Now, is it the baseline offensively that you'd want for a corner outfielder? I don't know. Certainly in the first few weeks it is. But I don't know. I think when they brought him back, it's like, okay, cool. But you still need to answer that question. I'm a little bit closer to being like, okay, if he's the guy, then he's the guy, because there's something, for whatever reason, it just seems to work here. But the true test will be when it's May and he's gone 3 weeks and he's had two hits and he's kind of going through it, how quickly he can bounce back and keep that from being a weak spot in the lineup.
Yeah. By the way, anyone that is out there that still is looking for those Jurickson Profar Mr. Relevant shirts, Breaking Tea has one out. So click the link in the description for that. Starting rotation. Concern there, Darvish, IL. I don't know really what to believe. They say the neck tightness, but then he goes on the 15-day IL, so he's missing a couple starts. He's not going to be able to come back till what, the 30th or something? So there's a little bit of concern there. With Musgrove, I believe in the talent. Like, we know he cares, competitor, but when you do look at some of the Baseball Savant numbers, it's a little bit concerning there. So I'm hoping it's a mechanical thing. We know he's coming off the shoulder injury, so I guess we got to keep that in the back of our minds. But, you know, Cease King, obviously we're loving what we're seeing there. Mm-hmm. Waldron, I think fans are still going to have question marks with, like, who is your biggest concern, I guess, in this rotation right now? Would it be Musgrove?
I would say probably Darvish. Okay. I mean, the questions for like a Darvish and a Waldron are very different questions, right?
Right.
Because one, it's like, okay, how long is this going to work? You know, is he really a number five starter? To this point, yeah. So, I mean, we'll just kind of keep trucking along and hope that guys don't figure out the knuckleball. And I think the good thing about the knuckleball is it comes at you differently, ideally, every single time. So it's not like you're seeing a pitch that's repeated, you know, the same way every single time you face it. So that'll make it a little bit harder. What happens in Coors Field with the knuckleball? That's going to be interesting. But yeah. with you, I think, you know, it has been a little bit concerning. I will plug the On Fire podcast. We just had Rob Friedman.
I was about to go do that. Yeah, because I watched that. That was really good with Rob Friedman, Darvish, Cease, a bunch of guys that were talked about there.
He's awesome.
I'll link that in the description for anyone listening or watching. That. I'll link that. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. It was a fun conversation and great stuff on all those guys. And I asked him about you because it's a guy he knows well and he's interacted with a bunch. And the injury part is like that's always kind of, you know, uncertain, but at least it's not like an elbow or shoulder or an oblique or something like that. Rob doesn't seem super concerned. I even asked him about like you kind of how does a guy like that age and the fact that he relies on so many pitches and he spins it rather than just like pounding you with 97 should help him age gracefully. And one of the things he said is like, he's a thinker and sometimes an overthinker. And he even kind of said the same thing about Joe Musgrove. Guys that spin it, like sometimes you just kind of lose the feel, you have a rough stretch, but that's all it ends up being. And so, you know, there's concern, I think, with both guys, but also like if either of them just suddenly clicked and went on a roll, like you wouldn't be surprised at all. Whereas maybe if it was a Blake Snell in the past, you know, and it's April, May, you're like, oh my gosh, like, is it ever gonna, and he, to his credit, he did. But with these guys, I think there's kind of the confidence and the track record. We know they work. They're as diligent as anybody. All it takes is kind of that one tweak, that one feel, and all of a sudden they're back to being the pitcher that they are. So I think these are concerning, but things that could also change pretty quickly.
Yeah. Last couple here. So Michael King, obviously almost a no hitter yesterday. And obviously there was conversation about people jinxing it and all that. And Darnay kind of hinted at it. And I think a lot of people were hinting at it.
I didn't say no hit. I didn't say no hit.
Right. And when I was younger, when like Musgrove threw the no hitter, at that point in time, I'm not doing anymore because I felt myself going to the scorebook and my head down so much, but I was sitting on the couch keeping score that game. And I did not get up after I realized what was going on. Yeah. And so I was like superstitious then, but now I'm like, come on, really? So I guess I wasn't thinking about it then, but not to call out by name, but maybe one of my parents were like that. So maybe that's where I got it from, if they're listening. But yeah, I know that you don't believe in the no hit jinx, but to those that do, what is your message to them?
And I don't, you know, it's funny because I didn't say no hit, and it's not because I do believe in it. I just don't feel like dealing with people that do believe in it, you know.
Yeah.
If everybody was on board and you could send out tweets like, hey, Michael King, no hitter through six, and nobody would say anything.
I may do that next time. Just be like, whatever.
I just don't feel like dealing with people in the replies and that sort of thing. And so I kind of shy away from it, not because I think I'll jinx it, but because I just don't want to deal with the headache. Nothing any of us do has any impact on anything. Now, I will say when Joe threw his no-hitter, I don't know if you remember this, Blake Snell was talking about it, and he was on the rail with Adrian Morejon. And Morejon went to, I don't know if he was getting water, going to the bathroom or something, and Blake grabbed him. He's like, no, like you're not moving. You're staying right here. And do I believe in jinxes or that any of these things have any impact on what plays out? No. But if I was in that dugout, I probably would not move. I would probably stick to whatever it is that I'm doing. And there's definitely times where I'm watching games where my team's on a roll. I'm be like, probably going to just hang out here for a little bit. Again, do I think it has any impact? No. But I don't entirely know how I would behave if I was at the game or involved in some way. Cause that's where I feel like it may be like, if I'm in my seat, you know, and it is yesterday and I'm watching Michael King, you know, no matter how much I might want popcorn, I might just decide to kind of stick it out.
Yeah, well, I mean, what, you're in the dugout? You're saying you wouldn't go up to Joe and be talking about, hey, how are you feeling? Eighth inning here.
I want
the scoreboard. You see that over there?
Everybody's wired the way they are, and guys in these certain positions tend to kind of pick that up and have that be part of their MO. I wish there was a guy that's like, hey guys, want to talk, you know? Yeah. That's like six innings in, it's like, don't act weird around me, like I know what's happening. Like, surely there's got to be somebody out there who was made more uncomfortable by getting that treatment than the alternative, but these are the unwritten rules, so to speak. And these guys are also so laser focused, and you see them on the tablet and talking to their catcher, talking to Ruben or what have you, and so it's not like they're just kind of sitting there. But I just also love the idea of there being a pitcher who just wants to like be involved in the Polaroids, you know, after being seven innings into a no hitter.
Yeah. All right. Last one, Xander Bogaerts. You know where it's going. Obviously there was a lot of conversation. There is still about, should they give Xander Bogaerts an ovation for tomorrow night, fans that are going to be at the ballpark, and I'll be there, and I'm not going to be gatekeeping. Like I hate that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You can do, it's one thing if we're going to be all like, hey, let's all boo Xander. That's different.
Yeah.
But if we're all saying, hey, let's, why not cheer for him? We can't take back the contract. He's one of us. We want him to do well at the end of the day. What will it hurt to cheer for him and see what happens?
100%.
I don't think it's a big deal. Just your thoughts on maybe a Xander ovation tomorrow, first at bat at Petco Park. I feel like that's going to be what a lot of people are going to be looking forward to going into tomorrow, seeing if it happens or not.
I'm curious how much this has gotten onto like the general zeitgeist of Padres fans, like you and I, who follow these things intimately, who are on Twitter and social media. I'm curious, like, of the, you know, 45,000 people that will be in the stands on a Friday night, how many of them are clued in onto this? I mean, obviously there's a decent amount. I feel like, I'm from Philadelphia, I follow, you know, all the media outlets. I don't really watch the Phillies really closely. I catch some highlights here and there, but it seemed like with Turner last year that there was a ton of buildup, you know, and obviously
like
this
radio
is
kind of buildup, like WIP buildup.
Yes.
Or,
okay. Yes. WIP 100%, who is kind of like the mouthpiece. And it seemed like there was more time even, like, it seemed like this was something people were talking about longer, and maybe that's not the case. I might be misremembering this, but I seem to remember it really being a thing, like a clear thing going into that game. Whereas, you know, I'm curious, like a couple days out when people start to have this conversation, come up with an idea, which I think is a great idea. There's no downside to it whatsoever. I'm curious how much, I'm sure Trey Turner knew about it before it happened last year, I would guess. I'm curious, like, will Xander have any idea that this could possibly happen, and what will his reaction be? I'm interested from that standpoint. I think, why not? It can't hurt. I'm sure he'd appreciate it, especially talking to him, and just like he's a good guy. He's a pro, and you know, goes about his business the right way. So I'm sure that would mean something to him. Also hitting leadoff too. This is assuming he's hitting leadoff. So maybe that takes, if he's hitting like fifth and you're just getting kind of like smattering of applause for everybody as they come up, and then a standing ovation for the guy hitting fifth, then it seems super random. It's still going to seem random, but the fact that it's like the first guy that's up for the Padres that night, you know, might make it seem a little bit less kind of out of the ordinary, out of nowhere. But a long way of saying, go for it. There's no downside to it whatsoever. You might think it's a little cheesy, but it can't hurt. And it's a show of support for a guy who's going to be a Padre for a long time. So I don't see any downside to it.
Yeah, totally agree. All right. Darnay Tripp, episode 588, Talking Friars. Much appreciated, Darnay, for coming on. And just real quick, anyone that might be going this weekend, you can use code Talking Friars on SeatGeek for $20 off your first order there.
Look at you.
Yeah, there you go. And then Gagliano and Bros, obviously the main partner of the show. They're obviously at Petco Park. They're at Snapdragon Stadium. They're on Friars Road. So check them out. Again, Darnay, I will link that the interview that he had, him, Derek, and Rob Freeman, Pitching Ninja. I will have that in the description for anyone that missed that. If you're someone that loves pitches, and I'm sure if you know who Pitching Ninja is, then you will be interested. But yeah, Darnay, thank you so much for the time. Much appreciated. And everyone, see you later.